Film City Video, this is Russ.
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
Hello and welcome to the Emerald City Video Podcast. This is Russ Burlingame, and today, that spooky rumbling is a distant timpani. That is a phrase uttered by Zero Effect director Jacob Kasdan on the commentary track to the film's DVD. Today is the 20th anniversary of the release of Zero Effect. Well, it is for another half an hour, and only if you're on the West Coast. I work weird hours, guys. But in any event, because Zero Effect is my personal favorite film, I wanted to do a quick kind of monologue and take this as my opportunity to once again recommend this movie to my customers. This is something I've done a lot over the years. Zero Effect is a 1998 drama. It stars Bill Pullman, Ben Stiller, Ryan O'Neal, and Kim Dickens in a story that's loosely adapted and an updated riff on the Sherlock Holmes story A Scandal in Bohemia. It was directed by Jake Kasdan, best known for the recently released Jumanji: Welcome to the Jungle. In the film, O'Neal plays Gregory Stark, a man being blackmailed, who reaches out to the world's greatest private investigator to help rid himself of the burden. Pullman gives a likably bizarre performance as the detective. His name's Daryl Zero, and Ben Stiller gives what may be his best performance as Steve Arlo, a neurotic lawyer who's kind of torn between the love of his life and this crazy, abusive, codependent work relationship with Daryl, because he knows that Daryl needs him. Kim Dickens of Fear the Walking Dead fame plays the blackmailer and Daryl's potential love interest later in the film. She's steely and sexy and just so generally charming in this movie that I had a crush on her all throughout college. Fun story about that. At San Diego Comic-Con, the year that Fear the Walking Dead was launching, I was supposed to be covering their press room. Plans changed, and I wasn't going to be. I mentioned in passing, in a different press room, to one of the other reporters that, oh, you know, it's too bad. I always had a crush on Kim Dickens when I was in college. It would have been fun to meet her. Plans then changed again, and I was in the Fear the Walking Dead press room. Sitting at the round table, I ended up right next to the talent seats, which means I ended up right next to Kim Dickens. She sat down, and before she had a chance to say hello, this other reporter told her, "Hey, this guy was in love with you in college." So yeah, that was awkward. However, I did explain to her that it was all about Zero Effect and that I had this picture of her and Ben Stiller that had been on my wall for a while in college. And she was like, "Oh, yeah, I really like that picture, actually." During my time at Emerald City Video, I've recommended this movie probably hundreds of times. Despite being almost a decade old by the time I was managing the store in Chimney's Plaza, it actually ended up appearing on our top 100 rentals of the year. This is something that was so improbable for an older movie that it actually led the owners to suspect I had somehow padded the numbers. I mean, in a way I had. Many of those rentals were free, since the movie was a catalog title and it qualified as a free rental to anybody paying full price for something else. Often, if people could not decide on their second movie, I'd send them away with Zero Effect. Nobody ever complained. This is actually part of why it became my favorite movie, not so much because it's the greatest movie I've ever seen. It's a very good movie. It's very well done. I like the performances, etc., etc. But because when you work at a video store and you spend so much of your time recommending things to people, a lot of the time you love movies and you're passionate about them and you send them away with somebody and they come back and they're like, "Oh man, that was terrible." Never had anybody come back who didn't at least enjoy Zero Effect. Now, part of the reason that this movie is so appealing is just the performances. Like I said, Pullman and Kim Dickens give good performances alone, but whenever they're on screen together, everything really sizzles. O'Neal is... he's Ryan O'Neal. He does a really good job of making what should be a kind of by-the-numbers role at least kind of interesting. And at this early stage in his career, Jake Kasdan was trying some really cool, creative things with the camera, largely because his father, Lawrence Kasdan, who, of course, wrote Raiders of the Lost Ark and The Empire Strikes Back, had probably shown him a bunch of stuff on the set of, like, The Big Chill in Silverado when he was a kid, And so he comes in. This is his debut feature. And he doesn't feel that need to shoot simply. It doesn't look like a TV show. There's this great kind of tracking shot in the very first scene. And the first scene is... Okay, so if you watch the trailer for this movie, the trailer isn't great. If you want to know if you would like this movie, watch the first scene. What happens is that Steve Arlo is essentially Daryl Zero's representative of the outside world. Daryl is agoraphobic, and the only time he can really go out and function in the world is when he's undercover. So to take his proposals, he has his lawyer go and talk to customers and all that. So it cuts between a shot of Steve Arlo in a fancy restaurant talking with Ryan O'Neill's character about this blackmailer. And Arlo is essentially selling Stark on Daryl Zero by listing his many virtues and his skills and his blah, 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 blah. This is intercut with Arlo, after the fact, at the bar with his friend, just talking shit about his employer. And the whole time, there's this great bit where the camera in the fancy restaurant is on like a track, and it's going around the restaurant. And for a lot of the time, there's like a lattice work that the camera ends up behind, so you're shooting from the vantage point of somebody who appears to be, like, spying on them. And these are little things. Like, it's a slow camera move. It's obviously just using the location effectively. But it doesn't call a lot of attention to itself, and it's so well done. And it really gives the scene, which could easily be just a shot, reverse shot, a sense of place that very few kind of restaurant scenes have, especially a restaurant scene where these people are talking about something where they can't be heard. So basically it looks like they probably rented out a room or something. There's no other extras. You don't even really see the server except for in the background. But the shot itself is composed so well. There's all kinds of stuff going on in the background of the restaurant, like in the deep background. The way that they're sitting, the way that they engage with each other, the way that the camera engages with the conversation is exactly what it needs to be to suck you in immediately. And then every time the conversation starts to go someplace really intense and you want to know what's going to be said next, bam, and you cut to Arlo at the bar talking shit to his friend, and then you get the laugh out, and then you come back to Stark. It's a really great kind of establishing scene that tells you everything you need to know about this movie in a way that the trailer almost completely fails to do. Now, if you look at a lot of trailers for movies in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, you'll realize, holy crap, how did we decide to go to movies back then? Because the trailers are all awful. Zero Effect definitely falls into that. One of the other things that I think is really cool, and you wouldn't necessarily notice it unless you've already seen the film once, is that the opening sequence takes you through, like the opening song sequence, not the thing in the restaurant, but the opening credits, take you through Daryl Zero's tax return. And every time he has to sign his name, he's signing a different name. And it's a combination of, like, you get the handwriting, and this is all like CG, just handwriting on the backdrop. But you get the handwriting of the people's names who are in the credits over their actual printed names. But then also you get like Mitchell Hodgemeyer, which is an alias that Zero Effect, or that Daryl Zero goes by in the film. And so you get all of these aliases that come up. And again, these are things you wouldn't recognize until you'd seen the film once, because there would be no reason for you to pay particular attention to what those names are. And then it wraps up with essentially him writing Daryl Zero, Daryl Zero, Daryl, in a bunch of different handwritings over and over till the screen goes black. And it's just kind of a fun, stylish way to do the credits that probably wasn't very expensive. And it's, again, kind of a microcosm for the film. It's creative without necessarily being overly ambitious. And this speaks to why it doesn't alienate people. And it speaks to why I can recommend it to pretty much anybody, and everybody comes back and says, oh, that was pretty good. Now, if you're wondering why the hell I said that thing about the timpani at the beginning, in the commentary track for the film, Kasdan says something along the lines of he doesn't believe that anybody ever listens to commentary tracks. And so throughout the thing, as he's talking about the movie, he actually goes through and says like one word every 10 minutes or something. And so that's that phrase, that spooky rumbling is a distant timpani, is something that he said if anybody ever comes up to him and, you know, says it to him, he'll like, I think it was like, he'll give them a hug and then donate $5 to their favorite charity or something like that. I have no idea if this has ever happened. When Jumanji came out, one of our reporters went to the press junket, and I tried to get him to say it to Kasdan on camera to see what would happen, but he forgot. I'm going to leave this pretty short, mostly because I probably will end up talking about this movie at some point with other members of the podcast, and this really was just an extended pitch that you should go see this movie. Again, it's the 20th anniversary of my favorite movie. In the show notes, you can find a link to a multi-part essay written 5 years ago during the month of the film's 15th anniversary. I had nothing to do with this. Believe it or not, there's somebody else who's also an entertainment writer who's also out there doing this. You can also find a link to purchase an alternative movie poster designed by artist Kristen McKellogg, whose work I really like. After having forgotten to do so months ago, I finally put my order in for one tonight. Zero Effect is available on DVD through the Warner Archive print-on-demand service, which means it's a little bit slow, a little bit pricey, but not terrible. You can purchase it through third-party retailers like Amazon, who will use the Warner Archive service to fulfill your order, and on Amazon, at least, it costs under $20. You can also get it streaming on at least Amazon and Vudu, probably also iTunes, if you would prefer to rent or buy the movie digitally. And that's it. You should like, rate, and review this podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Russ Burlingame, RussBurlingame. Or you can follow the show at ECV_podcast. Both I, as Russ Burlingame, and Emerald City Video have Facebook pages rather than accounts that you can like and follow along with us. Zach Roberts and I will be back very soon as part of our Snyder Cut Month. Snyder Cut Month is looking at various different director's cuts that Zack Snyder has made of basically most of the films he's ever made. Dawn of the Dead, which was his major kind of splashy debut. Watchmen. Batman v Superman. And there is a fourth one. Oh, Sucker Punch. All have extended, expanded, unrated, or director's cuts that we're going to take a look at, both the original and the director's cut, see what the differences are and how he improves them. And we're going to get those four episodes out between now and February 13th when Justice League comes out on home video. We're doing this because fans of Zack Snyder's DC movies, including Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, and Justice League, have been essentially insisting that Warner Brothers release his temp cut of Justice League, which was put together before he left the project following the death of his daughter this spring. The movie obviously did not do what people wanted it to at the theaters. Zach, when you listen to the podcast, had a lot of issues with it. I enjoyed it quite a bit, but doing the Snyder Cut Month is not necessarily to say that I am in agreement that Warner Brothers needs to spend a bunch of money to release another cut of a movie that did not perform up to their standards. That said, the fact that there's this kind of debate ongoing is born out of the fact that Snyder has had his version and then the studio's version of like half of all the movies he's ever done. And I figured it was definitely worth at least looking at his versions of some of his best-known, most successful movies, as fans of Justice League and fans of Zack Snyder are trying to insist on getting the Snyder cut of that movie released as well. So come back in just a couple of days for the Dawn of the Dead episode, and then we'll be burning right through those over the next couple of weeks.
Can I ask you a question?
What's that?
Why are we talking on the phone?